Good morning. Welcome to Sunday Morning. It's a news and public affairs programming service of Cox Media Group. I'm your host, Mimi Lawson. A returning guest, Deborah Grassman, the founder of Opus Peace, is with us this morning. So is Jim Rudolph, who is the president of Veterans Care. And we're going to be talking to him in just a second. Deborah, we've talked before about Opus Peace, but let's talk to the people who haven't heard what that organization is all about.
Well, Opus Peace is a 501c3 nonprofit. And we have a mission of responding to soul injuries. And the way we came about this mission is we were VA hospice nurses, a group of us, six of us. And we, over our careers, had taken care of more than 10,000 dying veterans. And what we saw surface at the end of life with these dying veterans was something that was more than PTSD. It was more than just moral injury. It was something deeper. It was something that did not fit into those categories. Mm-hmm. And over time, what we came to identify it as is soul injury. And so our nonprofit is about raising people's awareness, starting conversations about soul injury, because these 10,000 dying veterans have this wisdom that emerges, especially as they're coming to the end of their life. Mm-hmm. And walls come down, and they start talking about things and offering perspectives that maybe they didn't even have before.
Right.
And what we often see emerge is this perspective about how we all get separated from our own sense of self. And often that occurs because of unmourned loss and unforgiven guilt and shame. Those were the two major things that we saw emerge on dying veterans' deathbeds. And from that, we have been able to provide programs that help all of us address our own soul injuries. Even if we haven't been in combat, all of us have experienced hardships in our life, and sometimes we end up coming out of those hardships feeling small or less than, or something's wrong with us, I'm defective, those types of things. Mm-hmm. And that's a soul injury that can corrode our own sense of self and corrode our effectiveness in being in the world and being whole and happy.
And I think some people don't realize that they have these kinds of injuries because we don't talk a lot about this. You think, okay, it's not that serious. I wasn't abducted. I wasn't raped. I wasn't at war. But there's other things that can cause these soul injuries.
Oh, you are so right. I mean, you think of a kid that's been bullied.
Right.
If they've been bullied and they've been called a name. Or you think about, you know, minorities been called names, those types of things. And if we end up believing those names, if
sure.
we believe those labels and we think there's something wrong with us, or we think, oh, I wish I was like someone else, or I wish I could, you know, those types of things, that's what I call an insidious soul injury. So it's not dramatic like acute trauma, like a traumatic soul injury is, mm-hmm. which is very obvious, easy to see.
Right.
But an insidious soul injury is gradual. It is chronic. And it gradually erodes our sense of self-confidence, our identity. And over time, it can certainly cause a lot of damage. It's just more subtle. And in some ways, it's harder to see it because it is insidious. And it's like you said, well, why am I feeling like this?
Right. And I'm thinking that there are people like myself who every time I hear you talk about this, things start flashing in my brain. And I get this feeling. It's almost an overwhelming sense of depression. And I think that there's a lot of people out there that don't identify, what am I depressed about? My job is going well, blah, 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 blah. I have a good wife, a good husband, whatever. Why do I feel this way? And it could be because of these things, these childhood traumas that you're talking about.
It's true. You know, in hospice, we do a lot of life review work mm-hmm. where we're helping people look back over their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And their whole lives, not just the military,
sure.
you know, not just the last few weeks, but they'll start talking about their lives and their regrets. And when we would help them mourn their losses, when we would help them forgive themselves and others for the things that they had done or not done, those types of things, we would often see this liberating shift.
I bet.
And then poignantly, sometimes a veteran would look at us and say, why did I have to be dying to learn about this?
Gosh.
Why did I have to be on my deathbed to mm-hmm. understand this? And that's really was the impetus for the six of us leaving the VA so that we could start this nonprofit. to truly take this message that dying veterans have taught us and take it to the rest of the world.
Isn't it amazing that they serve our country and then they have served us in this way as well?
Mm-hmm. So true.
And it really is. I know that Jim Rudolph is with you. He's the president of Veterans Care. Is Veterans Care specifically a funeral home where veterans are taken care of? I know we probably should ask him about that, shouldn't we? We were talking, Jim, about Veterans Care. I know that you're a funeral home for veterans, but is there something particularly special about this particular place that you run?
Oh, yes. Well, our name is Veterans Funeral Care, and we're about 18 years old. When we started, if there was any good fortune, it probably was that all the first four people that went to work were either a veteran or the children of veterans.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously they've all lived, we've all lived this lifestyle.
Right.
It's very much a special tribe, and even has a special language. So
right.
Obviously we are focused on them.
What are special circumstances that you find when you do a funeral of anybody else who isn't a veteran as opposed to a veteran? Are there special circumstances beyond the pomp and circumstance that veterans are honored with?
Very much. When we go to a hospital or a nursing home, the typical funeral home in America will go with a quilt or a blanket to cover the stretcher with. We use an American flag. We use the American flag that will be presented to them, later at the cemetery.
Right.
So that flag goes with them, all the way to the grave. A big part of our work, so many veterans pass away every year and do not use the thousands of dollars of veterans benefits. If you try to buy at a local cemetery,
right,
what the VA gives you, it's about $10,000 to $15,000.
Wow.
The nation, because every veteran gets two free graves, two burial vaults. They share a double marker, perpetual care opening and closing, it's all included.
Jim, I didn't realize that.
Oh, it's huge, and many, not all, but many veterans also have cash benefits. Based on where did you die, if it was a VA hospital, or if you're a disabled veteran, somewhere between $1,400 and $2,000 is available to that veteran. And every year, we constantly hear from the people deep in the bowels of the VA saying, we budget X amount of money because we know actuarially how many veterans are going to die.
Sure.
And the benefits are never applied for.
Wow.
It's the typical funeral home that just does one or two of these a year doesn't know the benefits and doesn't know how to get them. We go to the National Cemetery every day, sometimes multiple times a day. So that's just a unique part of our life.
Mm-hmm. And I think that I'm pretty knowledgeable about what goes on just because of the show that I do, but I didn't even know this. So I'm thrilled that you are telling beneficiaries out there that this exists for them.
Something that's really cool, because every day we have veterans are walking through the door here every day. I mean, it's 9 to 5 and it's busy. What's really fun is we do have a lot of posters and so forth on the wall. We actually have pictures framed of ashes being scattered at sea by the United States Navy. And these old Navy veterans will walk up and say, I'll be darned, how'd you get that? And say, well, we probably send 3 to 4 sets of cremated remains to the Navy every month, and the Navy will scatter your ashes at no cost. And they'll also, they do a service, they do rifle, there's a rifle team, and they're just shocked. So there's all sorts of little known benefits that would be really meaningful to a veteran if they know where to get them, how to get them.
So if somebody's listening that maybe had a family member cremated and they don't have a place to inter their veteran, they could contact you?
Oh, Lord, yes, because, you have to remember, the National Cemetery Administration doesn't care. Every veteran gets two free graves. They get the double marker. There's no cash register, no Visa terminal in a national cemetery.
Right.
And the VA doesn't care if you put an urn or a casket in it.
Okay.
So they should absolutely call us. They can also go to veteransfuneralcare.com. Read about the benefits, but we probably love having the phone calls even more than having them go to the website.
I'll bet. That's one of those things, we talk about, we should be doing more for our veterans. And then here is this great opportunity, which a lot of people, when Deborah and I were talking about this before, that, we talk about all the things that these veterans have done for us. This is a great program that even I didn't know existed. And I've got to think there are so many people out there that would feel so honored by this.
We have real life what Deborah and Opus Peace does. Mm-hmm. You know, I have watched them. I remember when all of them were working at Bay Pines, mm-hmm. and how engaged they were with the veterans. And, you know, I do a very good job about folding flags and hugging veterans and hugging the wives. Being around them was a chance to be around the veteran, you know, as they were dying.
Right.
And I can never forget that one time we got a phone call from Bay Pines, and they said, we have a veteran who is unclaimed, and he's been dead about 3 weeks. Could you help us? And we said, well, of course. And what we found was we had a World War II veteran with a Silver Star, with a Purple Heart.
Oh, man.
And his family refused to pick his body up. And later I got a letter from a daughter, and it was really full of things you couldn't even print. Bad dad, bad husband, you know, bad, bad, bad.
Right.
And yet we read his DD, you know, your DD-214 is like your college transcript.
Okay.
What you did.
Right.
And Terry Platts, one of the first four people that worked here, is 33 years in the Air Force, and he's a licensed funeral director. Blair was born at Quantico, the son of a Marine. My mm-hmm. dad is buried at Florida National. I was raised in an Army house.
Mm-hmm.
Alan's dad was at Guadalcanal, Purple Heart, Bronze Star.
Amazing.
And we're reading this man's DD-214, POW award, and the story behind his Silver Star was he engineered an escape. Everybody made it but him. He was the only one recaptured, tortured. You know, he would have benefited from Opus Peace.
Isn't that amazing?
And we, as a staff, I still remember that because of his Silver Star, he was entitled to be buried at Arlington, and we sent him there. And later, when his family finally reached out to us and we told him what we did, they said, well, he didn't deserve it because he was a, I can't say the word.
Right. He was not a nice man.
Well, you know, and I said to her, you know, I get it, and I feel bad.
Right.
But our job is to bury them and honor them for what they did while they wore a uniform, and your dad was a star, and she hung up on me.
Oh, gosh.
So what Deborah Grassman, what Marie, what Pat, they're doing such a great job. If we can get out in front and get them before they're on their deathbeds, the potential to increase their quality of life. I went to my first soul injury ceremony. I was shocked. I saw people. We actually had one of our staff members was an Afghanistan-Iraq veteran.
Mm-hmm.
And my reaction to watching him was very moving. And I knew that we were doing a good thing and that she, you know, Opus Peace, they're on the right path. Right? And this is going to help a lot of people.
Deborah and I talked about this, Jim, the last time that we talked, that my father had a friend, and he became an uncle to me, so to speak, that was a prisoner of war. And the nightmares that that man experienced for the rest of his life was something, of course, in those days we didn't talk a lot about. But the difference in what this kind of program could have meant to him, and it gives me chills the whole time that you're talking. I'm literally on the verge of tears because, yes, you're right. This guy may not have ended up being the greatest father or the greatest husband, but he served our country in a way that we can never repay to him. And the fact that you did this and honored him in this way touches me deeply.
Yeah, sometimes the people at the National Cemetery could also tell you we all have the experience that sometimes there's major dysfunction in these families. You know, my dad wasn't there. He was always gone. He was in the Marine Corps. And then now it's over. And now we're at Florida National Cemetery or Bay Pines. We go to Arlington National Cemetery a couple times a month,
mm-hmm.
From our base here in Clearwater. But when you see families heal, I mean, they realize I am proud of what my dad did.
Right.
He did do a good, you know, his life mattered.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes what you see people doing is, I'm an emotional guy, and that for me that's the payoff very often is to realize, you know, I don't understand it at the graduate degree level that Deborah Grassman does, but I see it with my own eyes, and I see what it does, that it's very healing. And it feels good, yes.
I can hear the emotion in your voice. I really can. I just want to honor you and thank you for the things that you're doing for the people that have served. Sorry, see, it's even hard for me.
Well, you'd have to. I had a father who was, he loved nothing more than the Army uniform. It took him a lot of years to admit that there were other service branches where he was so bad.
But besides the Army.
Just, yes. Oh, he was a red, white, and blue
guy. Oh, that's
guy.
Great. Jim and I are just talking about this, and I'm doing the best to keep my tears back in this. These are exactly the people that you could have helped this guy beforehand. And I just can't help but think that this family could have been healed with this kind of help.
Absolutely. We don't focus enough on families of the military. I often call them unsung heroes.
You're right.
Because they often suffer in silence. And, you know, to me, what I have seen in the military, really in the American culture in general, is we tend to be a rather stoic culture. Mm-hmm. And, of course, people go into the military, and for sure that's emphasized tenfold. And then people leave the military and they come home, and that stoic culture is exerted into the whole family and instilled into the whole family. So oftentimes this stoicism acts as a wall, sort of, to put on an exterior front, so mm-hmm. to speak, and it hides that interior. And I often, you know, part of the healing process and part of what I have always encouraged veterans to do is to think, to use their stoicism. Stoicism is not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we often need it, you know, to get through our everyday battles.
Or an interview.
Yeah, everything. But I always tell them, you know, use your stoicism more like a door that you can open and close at will,
I see.
As opposed to a wall where you get imprisoned behind it. And that's often the liberation that I would see at the end of life, is because that stoic wall starts crumbling automatically.
Right.
For all of us, as we're aging, as we start dying, especially as we're nearing death, our conscious mind gets weaker and our unconscious mind gets stronger.
Right.
And that's often when these memories surface unbidden. If we can learn how to develop a different relationship with that stoic wall, to be able to open it up, to be able to look at, you know, who we really are, what's mm-hmm. really behind there, and be able to, as I said, those unmourned losses that are often there, that unforgiven guilt, that shame, those are the areas that we really focus on, that it's not so much about trying to be stronger, not so much about trying to be more resilient, mm-hmm. any of those things. It's more about removing the barriers to access that resiliency that is already there.
Somebody said something to me recently, and I don't know if you think this would apply to you, that she wants to get you to a place where you remember a situation without reliving it.
Yeah, Bessel van der Kolk, who has the Center for Trauma in Boston, has done a lot of research and work around that. And he says what you want to do is to be able to revisit the trauma, not relive the trauma.
Right.
And in order to revisit the trauma, that requires that you go to a different part of the brain. Traumatic memories are stored in the amygdala, mm-hmm. the fear-based part of the brain. And when you're reliving that trauma, you're in the amygdala.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to help you. He says it actually re-traumatizes. He said what you have to learn how to do is to go into that self-compassionate part of the brain, and then you can revisit the trauma without reliving it. And that's how restoration, and we do a lot of that type of work, a lot of somatic type of therapy, Bessel van der Kolk is showing through his research, really help people to come back home to themselves, so to speak, so that when they're triggered, they don't just disappear.
Right.
They don't just lose consciousness, so to speak.
You know, right.
Become sort of distant and removed and unconscious, so to speak. But rather, we could actually stay in our bodies, heal our bodies, and retrain our bodies so that the amygdala doesn't have to fire and doesn't have to separate us from our own sense of self.
It sounds like something almost impossible to do.
It is. It's not impossible at all, really, is what they're showing. It's not easy.
Right.
And it's not as simple as just taking a pill and making it disappear.
Which is what so many doctors want to do.
Of course, we all want that. I mean, you know, if I have PTSD, that's what I want.
Right.
As well. So it does take a little bit more than that. We use a technique called the anchoring heart technique, and it is amazing. We learned it really just doing it instinctually at our patient's bedside as they were dying, and sometimes they would be scared, or sometimes these traumatic memories would be surfacing unbidden. It would make them very agitated, or mm-hmm. they would be shame, you know, things they did in the war or at other times, and how that still haunted them their whole lives. And what we really found was just by laying our hand firmly on their heart or firmly on their back. You can approach the heart from the backside as well. In fact, in the military, we say, "I've got your back."
Exactly.
It's all about creating that safe place where you don't have to hide from shame. It's let me hold you tightly here and firmly. Tell me about the shame. Tell me what you did, if they want to. You know, you never force that. But oftentimes, again, if people are on their deathbed, so to speak, they do want to tell someone.
Right.
And they need someone to be able to bear witness. And part of the program on Monday night will be teaching the audience how to do that. How do you bear witness? What is the responsibility of the public to bear witness to the losses, to the pain, to the shame that our military carry, our first responders carry, that every single one of us carry? Because, as I said, we are extrapolating this out into much broader populations. You know, whether you've been molested, whether you've been bullied, you know, whether, you know, you've experienced other types of insidious soul injuries, you know, being able to move into that self-compassionate part of our brain so that we can touch our story without the shame, without the judgment. And then how, as a public, as a witness, as a friend, as a family member, whoever,
right,
how do we bear witness to that? How do we create that safe emotional space so that people can be witness to their own pain, their own shame, and they can create a safe place for it within their own self? Because that's personal intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
So we talk about intimacy, and it's often, you know, how can we be intimate with someone else?
Right, it's sexual intimacy.
Or sexual intimacy, those types of things. But I'm talking about, do we know how to be personally intimate with our own self, in the sense of, do we have a relationship with the part of ourself carrying our pain, mm-hmm, carrying our shame? Or are we so disconnected, so distanced from that, that we actually lose? That, to me, leads to a passionless life. The key is being able to be intimate with these parts of ourselves so that we can grieve the loss, because that's what will set it free.
Mm-hmm.
So
is
that we can
is grieving the loss.
It is. It's grieving loss. Grief is the natural, normal expression of loss. That's what releases it.
And so many, even when you lose somebody, people expect you to get over a loss, whether it's a loss of a child or a husband or whatever it might be, in a certain period of time. And most people that I've talked to, even myself, you never get over that loss. And I think when people don't get over it as fast as other people think they should, it adds to the problems.
It does, and they feel guilty. Why?
Right.
Is there something wrong with me that I can't get over this?
Right.
Our culture is fundamentally afraid of emotional pain. I often ask the question, how would the world be different if we were not afraid of our emotional pain?
Right.
How would I be different if I wasn't afraid of my emotional pain? Because I can guarantee you, if we were not so afraid of our emotional pain, we would not need all the numbing agents that we currently use to numb it out.
And we've talked about this many times, that a lot of veterans are using those numbing agents that they sometimes even used when they were, say, in Vietnam, for example.
Sure.
They became addicted to drugs or alcohol or other abuses.
I mean, there's lots of addictions other than drugs and alcohol.
Sure.
And of course, they're going to try to self-medicate, mm-hmm, with whatever numbing agent, whether it, sometimes it's workaholism. It can be lots. It wears lots and lots of different phases. We
right.
all have. You know, I know for me, one of my favorite numbing agents is turning the TV on. You know,
right.
I'm really upset about something, and I don't want to feel the pain or the loss or the abandonment or the betrayal, whatever it might be that I'm feeling. You know, I'm going to turn that television off and try to get distracted away from it,
mm-hmm,
rather than feel that loss.
Let's talk to people who are listening to you who are very afraid. And just what you've been talking about, I already felt like a wall of my own go up, not personally, but for those other people who are saying, oh, no, I'd rather go out and have a couple of glasses of wine. I don't need this. This is too painful.
The fear, you know, I can remember in my own life many years ago when I was going through something, I was running away from it as fast as I could.
Right.
And I remember exactly where I was standing when I said, oh, my gosh, my fear of this pain can't be any worse than the pain itself.
Mm.
What if I just let myself feel it? And that really was a start of a healing journey for me. And this fear of pain that we have causes us to get separated from our own sense of self, and that's how we lose our own sense of vitality.
Ah.
source of vitality is because we get so numbed out that we end up getting separated from our own self. And that is what how we define a soul injury, mm-hmm. is getting separated from our own sense of vitality. You can have two people, for example, you can have two people go through the same war,
right,
side by side, and one person will come out of that war with bitterness, and another person will go into the wilderness of their soul and search for answers and find those answers and come out. I mean, I can tell you, I've sat at some veterans' bedsides just with my jaw on the ground, what they experienced, but more importantly, how they worked through mm-hmm. what they had experienced. And they are amazing teachers for us for how to do this work. One of the things I always say is the only difference between ordinary people and heroes is that heroes don't waste their suffering.
Wow, I love that, Deborah. I love that. And like I said to Jim before, I mean, they've served us, our country, by their service to the military, and now they're serving us as they die.
They are. They're teaching us. They're right. Revealing secrets about trauma, secrets about living, secrets about how to live through trauma and redeem that trauma so that the suffering is not wasted. I've had many teachers, so to speak, in my life,
right.
but I categorize those 10,000 dying veterans as my greatest teachers.
And hopefully they can be ours, too.
I hope to be, you know, my mission is, my hope is that I can be a trustworthy steward of those lessons they have taught me.
It sounds like it. We've talked a lot about veterans, and obviously the thing that you're doing tomorrow is about veterans, but it sounds like everybody can avail themselves of this work that you're doing. Tell us what's going on Monday.
Well, on Monday there will be the film debut of a film called Soul Injury, Liberating Unmourned Loss and Unforgiven Guilt and Shame. And it is absolutely open to the public. There is no charge. Veterans Funeral Care feels so strongly about this message about soul injury. They feel so strongly about the lessons that veterans have to teach the rest of the world that they have sponsored this. So we would encourage veterans, non-veterans, civilians, military families, and everybody else, because we all have soul injuries. And I guarantee you, even though you're going to hear some stories about veterans, you're going to come away from this film understanding that this is not about veterans.
Mm-hmm.
This is about humanity.
About all of us.
This is about how to live within our own self. This is about how to have a passionate life. And paradoxically, it comes from opening up to our unmourned loss and our unforgiven guilt. Paradoxically, that is what allows us to be liberated so that we can access our own interior vitality. There will also be a panel of people. You'll have the founders of Opus Peace and the original nurses who started and were at the bedside of those 10,000 dying veterans. They will be there to answer questions and to start a conversation. Everyone is going to receive an Ask Me About Soul Injury button because, you know, we don't change healthcare, we don't change culture, we don't change values until we start a conversation to raise the awareness. So we are starting that conversation. This film is opening the eyes of people to the necessity to have the conversation. Our goal really is one day, we truly believe that one day, beside post-traumatic stress disorder in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for Mental Health, the DSM, there will also be a category that says soul injury.
Right.
So that we can all see that when we get separated from our own sense of self, we have lost who we are, and that cripples us in many ways when we are not able to inhabit ourselves completely.
Mm-hmm.
We wall off sections of ourselves.
I cannot wait to see this. I will be there tomorrow. Again, give us the address that where this is going to be shown and what time.
I'm Mimi at Gulf Coast Church, 13301 Walsingham Road, Largo, Florida.
And you have a number in case people need directions.
597-5952034.
And a website, possibly?
People go to veteransfuneralcare.com. The information for soul injuries right on the header.
Awesome.
Starts at 6:30.
Jim Rudolph, the president of Veterans Funeral Care, and Deborah Grassman, the founder of Opus Peace, have been our guests this morning on Sunday Morning. You guys have really touched my heart. I cannot wait to see you tomorrow night, and thanks for spending time with us.
Mimi, thank you.